Another palindrome episode.
Huh?
Yeah, they happen like every 10 shows, though.
So what's this one? Because I don't even know. Something 2, something 2.
252.
Oh, 252.
Backwards? 252.
252.
Yeah. Mm. That's a palindrome.
Yeah, I know what it is, but I didn't know what number we were on.
252.
Okay, so we'll get another one at 262 and 272?
Yeah, every 10.
Great. So is this something that should be celebrated?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. No.
You brought it up.
I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, me too.
Hello and welcome to episode 252 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. And with me as always is...
Adam.
The end. Just Adam. Like Oprah and Madonna.
Yeah. I left you hanging on that one. I like to mix it up. Like I said, sometimes Adam from Vancouver, sometimes just Adam.
Sometimes Adam from Portland.
Sure.
No, that's not a thing. What is going on, Adam?
Halloween excitement, buddy. How about you? Mm-hmm.
It's less here. The excitement is less. It's Halloween exists, but it's the excitement level isn't the same. And I know it's what you're going through back home.
Yeah, kids have been basically ramping up their excitement level for the last month, I'd say. So, yeah. They are primed. And today is, you know, it's Halloween's, well, we're recording this on a Friday. Halloween's on the Saturday. Uh-huh. So this is the last day of school before Halloween. So, of course, you know, it's wear your costumes to school day, which is a big event in itself. So basically they double dip. They get the Halloween experience at school and then they'll get it again tomorrow when they get to do the trick or treating.
We were kids once.
Yeah, we were.
I could just be misremembering. I don't remember there being this much lead time for me. Like,
no, but I do remember how big it was, like the actual day. Like, I still have memories of different trick-or-treating events that happened throughout my life and different costumes and whatnot, way more than I remember anything else. The birthdays or holidays, I mean, Halloween definitely sticks with me.
I concur. I remember that quite vividly, or at least I think it was vivid. I don't remember. It was pretty dark. I think we used to turn the clocks back earlier, you know?
Yeah.
But earlier in the year, I mean. And so, but I remember, I guess a few days before Halloween, you'd get excited about, you know, thinking about what you might dress up as.
Yeah.
But something tells me that, you know, November 1st, 2014, your kids had already dialed in this year.
Oh, yeah. I think they had, yeah.
Uh-huh. And more than one. Did they do more than one outfit this year?
No, this year just one outfit. We've been fortunate in that we've had a lot of hand-me-downs. This year, we were not so fortunate in that the kids went to the Halloween costume store that they kind of pop up. They kind of pop up in abandoned warehouses or stores that have closed, and they just basically take up residence in one of those stores for about 2 months. And so they have all kinds of costumes, and so my wife took them and they picked out costumes this year. So this was big for them. Yeah, actually getting to pick in a store full of costumes versus here's your cousin's old Superman or Spider-Man or whatever.
Right. I don't know if I ever had a store bought one.
Oh,
ever.
This was big for them. So they both got store bought ones this year.
Huh.
Yeah.
I was Luke Skywalker from Empire Strikes Back, the ice planet Hoth.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it Luke Skywalker? No, it was Han Solo. Doesn't matter. You're the same guy. You wore your thick jacket. That was the move.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man one time. My dad made me a Spider-Man costume.
Okay.
Other than that, all the other stuff was homemade. Never, ever had a store-bought costume.
Yeah, I was. I remember one year my mom made me out of one of those kits, you know, like those sewing kits you can get. She made me a Batman. Uh-huh. And then the next year, I think I was Robin. Also remember being back in the heyday of Pee Wee Herman before he was disgraced. Relatively speaking,
compared to other disgraces of late.
Yeah, not so bad.
He's not so bad.
Yeah, but I was Pee Wee Herman one year. Had the gray suit and the bow tie and all that, and I remember that being one of I think I was probably a little older, like, you know, not 28, but you know, grade 7 or grade 8. And that being a costume that everybody loved, because I mean that was the pinnacle of his popularity, and like I say, just happened to have a gray suit, and then we did the rest.
Nice,
yeah. So, but I again fond memories. One year I think my brother was grapes, like a whole bunch of purple balloons.
Uh huh.
And I remember popping as many of his balloons, and him not being thrilled with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now, Halloween, technically, when you're listening to this, Halloween is over. What did you dress up as this year?
This year, I am wavering. Some years I have dressed up. I was the Flash a couple years back. My kids are definitely pushing for me to dress up. So we'll see. I have a pair of like red pajamas that goes nicely with this Super Chicken outfit that we have, which has a cape. Mm-hmm. And a chicken kind of hood that with the clucker, and some big, you know, white hands that go on, and feet, white feet that go over your shoes. So I'm toying with the idea of Super Chicken. So we'll see. If I go as anything, it'll be Super Chicken.
I will submit that you should go. You should wear your Flash outfit, but also borrow a large, long raincoat. And just wear that and see if anybody gets the joke.
Right. Yeah. Double Flash.
No, I know that you and I both get the joke. We don't have to say it. But that would be... And put a flash on your camera. That's what you should do.
Right, right. A lot of flash.
Here's the flash.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to do that.
I think I will. I'm going to get a flash. Not this year, but next year. Because this year, we're doing father-son team. We're going as Lumberjacks.
Oh, nice. That's your go-to.
It is my go-to. I had something else lined up, but then accidentally my son has all the lumberjack material.
Right.
And so I basically reprised my role as lumberjack for him because we can do the, you know, father-son duo.
Right. Can you give him an axe? Is he going to let him handle an axe?
Yeah, no, it's going to be duct tape, though. Like, it's going to be duct tape and cardboard. Same as mine.
Okay,
you know, but we'll do that. I'll make him a small axe, and so we'll go with that. My other plan, my backup, my go to is just Belushi from Animal House.
Okay,
and no, but there's no way anybody here would ever get that, and I hate explaining it.
Okay, so. Well, now Germany, I know you sort of said that Halloween really isn't much of a thing, so you guys are full out trick-or-treating and just hoping that there's a few houses that participate, or how does this work?
Yeah, I think, well, we have a party here. So
okay, so you just dress up for the party.
Over. Yeah, all of our friends bring their kids over, so we'll have like, it'd be like 40 or 50 people at the house tomorrow.
But no door-to-door knocking trick-or-treat.
Yeah, a little bit. It's starting to catch on, so we might do a couple... Now that we know the people in our neighborhood, we'll do a couple laps and or a couple houses anyway. And
but you're going to let them know they need to have candy, or they know the deal?
I, you know what? My wife handles that. I got.
We'll take anything you got in here. Stick of butter.
Yeah, my kids don't care. My kids have had enough sugar. Don't worry about it. they're set.
They just want to knock on the door, have you open it, and show you their costume.
They've never actually done it before, so. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
There you go. That's Halloween. So I will post a picture of me and the father-son lumberjack.
Oh, you've already taken this?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you're to be this, continued. To be continued.
Yeah. We're into the Back to the Future mind, you know, space-time continuum.
Right. Even I was confused there.
Yeah. I really got you on that one.
Now, are you going to make up him a beard?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's getting the full face.
Well, he actually grows one now. He's not quite two, but he's still growing. He's a little bit like
it's a little bit of whiskers. It's just whiskers.
That's patchy. It's a little patchy. Yeah. So I'll just fill in the. I'll use some mascara and fill in the blank spots.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so we'll do that. So
Now, what's your Halloween picture kind of like setup? Are you going just, hey, we're going to go out on the street, we're just going to, you know, do a run-in, or are you setting up a background and going to do like a full-on model shoot, or which way do you go with this?
I am not setting up a background. I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Because we're hosting the party. If we were going to a party, I would set up the background and then leave. I don't care. But we're going to have a whole bunch of little rugrats running around here, smash into stuff, and I don't want them smashing into the background.
Gotcha.
So I won't do that. Maybe we'll do it out in the street. Maybe we'll go, you know, cut down one of the neighbor's trees just for a joke, you know, because we're lumberjacks.
Right. You didn't have to explain it.
And when they come, well, evidently, double flash, you know. And when they come running out, I'll explain, no, it's just a joke. Just hang tight. Go back in the house. Yeah, don't worry.
We'll make you some firewood.
Yeah. I'll split the firewood with you. Don't worry about it. Okay? So... So we'll figure something out and post a photo.
Great.
Amazon, if you are going to buy your well, not this year. It's probably too late now that you're listening to this. But if you're looking for costumes, they probably sell them on Amazon.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Click through our site. Help us out. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I did. I know I alluded to it last week. Buying my daughter some Christmas presents on Amazon. I did follow through and I bought her both the Fuji Polaroid camera.
Nice.
Instax Mini 8, I think is what it's called. And okay. They've actually all gone, the prices dropped on these. So they used to be around $100 and now they've gone down about $20. And if you buy it with film, I want to say it was $79. Like, comes with a 10 pack of like exposures.
Okay.
Or Polaroids, whatever you want to call them, the paper that it prints it onto. Uh-huh. Or if you want to buy it without the film, which is what I did because I bought a separate pack of multi-pack of film, it was $70. So I thought that was pretty reasonable.
Sure.
For what gets great reviews as far as an instant camera that's great for a kid and got all kind of features. And I think will be pretty much point and shoot for her, but it'll be perfect. And so then I bought her a 40-pack of film with all, you can buy like different kind of backgrounds. Like, so they kind of like fancy up the background around where the Polaroid gets printed.
Okay.
So it came with like stained glass and they called it cotton candy and rainbow. And cause she really wanted like the fancy background paper, mm-hmm, which turns out was cheaper on Amazon than it is at your local store. So
what does a 40 pack cost?
Roughly, it's about for the plain stuff, it's roughly about $1 an exposure when you buy it from your whatever Best Buy. And then the fancy stuff, I think, is an extra like $1 every 10. So I think it was somewhere in the vicinity of $44 for 40 sheets or whatever.
Wow. 40,
yeah. So the thing is I figured, okay, so buy her the camera, we'll buy her 40 pack, and then after that, she's on her own. She can use her allowance or whatever money she gets for presents or whatnot to buy more film. And she'll have to figure out that you don't just kind of mow through it all the way you do with your digital camera.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's how you, it's a tough school of hard knocks when you're 8.
Yeah. But I'm excited because I think it's a good learning tool and, mm-hmm, and just, it'll be fun. So, you know, perfect sort of thing for if she actually had it for Halloween, she's not getting it till Christmas, but mm-hmm, that's perfect. Just here you go. Take a shot of each, you and your friends or whatever in your Halloween costumes and boom, up on the wall it goes.
Are you going to buy her like a bulletin board or something to put them up on?
We kind of have that going, but I think we're going to need another one because that one's all filled up with pictures already. And now what I started doing is I'm not too concerned about the pink walls in her room. I basically just been using thumbtacks and pictures she likes. We've been we made an area where we've been thumbtacking it. And I'll, uh-huh. Again, I don't plan on moving out of our place anytime soon. So we're just putting the little thumbtacks up on the wall.
Love it. I actually I saw them in the camera store the other day here, and I kind of was looking, like, I don't really know much about, you know, which the different numbers are, the 8, the whatever, the 25s.
There's some fancier ones, but the there's a 7, which was last year's whatever model. Now there's the Mini 8, which is the most popular one, comes in all the different colors, and that seems to be the one that the majority of people have. And then there's kind of like a more, I guess if you could call it pro one, with more manual features and stuff on it, that's I want to say, I don't know what the number is, but it's a totally different number. It's like a 200 or something, a Fuji.
Okay.
Yeah, 200 Polaroid one. And there's even a wide angle one too. So there's a few different versions, yeah, with different features. But the sort of standard kid one, I would think, would be the Mini 8.
In it's just a spoiler alert, in the upcoming interview I did with Chris Marquardt that we're going to hear later in the show, we talked a little bit about that, about those cameras, actually.
Oh, I do have something to talk about that's unrelated to this Instax and unrelated to anything else we've talked about, but is photography related.
Okay, finally.
Okay, so I completely forgot about this until this very second, but last weekend I just was surfing Craigslist and I came across an ad for a photography swap. So like at a community center in Vancouver, it was like an annual swap that they have. And It just said basically photography and camera swap at the Croatian community center down in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And I'd heard that this sort of thing exists in Vancouver, but I'd
That's
never
a
been
big
able,
room too.
But I've never been able to get to it. So I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to, it was on a Sunday and I found out about this Saturday night. And I said, I'm going to go down there for whatever, half an hour and just kind of peek around. And so I did, and the sort of funny thing about this was I drove up and I could see it sort of said, oh, there's a camera, like there's two big rooms there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It said, you know, there's a camera swap and then there's like a comic, like little convention going on. And so, you know, I'm walking up and like, I don't know the building or anything. And I walk up and I walk to the wrong side. And I'm just wearing, you know, like casual, like jeans and a t-shirt. And I walk up to the one door and the girl looks at me. She points, camera swap is over there. And,
and she's on the wedding ring.
and then I kind of laughed to myself and I turned and I went to walk. And then the three people coming behind me had like Batman and Star Wars masks on, all tattooed with like superhero stuff on their arms, like full sleeve stuff. And I was like, yeah, profiling exists.
That's excellent.
Yeah, they weren't. When I walked up to the photography door, they did think I was in the right place. So yeah, they didn't question me on it. They didn't say, "Oh, are you here for the photography swap?" They said, "Yeah, $5 for entry, please."
That's, and you whipped open your rain jacket and
yeah. But anyways, I went to this swap not knowing what to expect. And have you been to one of these before?
No.
All you would have loved it. I was out of my element. It was a ton of old analog gear.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Just tons. And I didn't know what I was looking at, but if you were looking for film camera stuff, that was the place to be. There was a very little bit of digital photography stuff, and there were some filters, and I kind of like, you know, went through, and there's bags and stuff. Again, all kinds of stuff, but the vast majority was more or less like old, you know, basically film cameras.
Wow.
So, and I didn't know what I was looking at in half of them. And they all had like their little display cases. And there was a huge range in price from, you know, you could pick up, you know, $25, $30 cameras that look much like that Canon Canonette. A lot of them were Canons, old Canons, and then all kinds of old film lenses. But then, you know, that other kind of medium format, like the ones that look like the accordions, there was a lot of those. I don't know, what's the name for those? What are those called?
It could be anything. I mean, I have one that mine's a Kodak.
Okay, but is there a name for that specific kind of camera?
With the bellows?
Is the bellows the accordion part?
The accordion part, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. So with the bellows.
Okay.
So I was more just kind of browsing for interest. Like I thought I might come across something that, you know, I wasn't looking for, but I might say, oh, okay, I have to buy that. There's very little in the way of lighting. So there's very little. There's one guy's little booth where he had some lighting stuff. Otherwise, it was mostly cameras, not flashes or triggers or anything like that. It was filters and it was old film cameras.
Oh man, I wonder how often this happens, because I actually want to pick up like an old medium format camera. I mean, I have the Kodak. It's called the Autograph or I think the Signature. I forget what it's actually. I forget what it's called, because you actually write on the negative on the back of the camera. And I haven't even had a chance to use it yet. I'm still filming it from when I got it a year and a bit ago. I haven't even had a chance to process what's in there to see what's on that roll. But I want to get like a Mamiya medium format.
Okay.
And so because they're just the images are just outstanding. Like what you can do with those. I just really, really love shooting with those. Like the ones I've shot with you know, who we'll hear from later. I've shot with Chris Marquardt before and just think, wow, like this is, once you do that, you're hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So
yeah, you'll have to keep your lookout for such a thing. Cause yeah, that's the first that I knew it existed, but that was the first time I found out about it in time. Usually I find out about it after it already takes place. So I just caught it on Craigslist and cool. Yeah, it was. Well, now, what do you think that the average seller looks like at one of these swap and shops? Like do you have a stereotype in your mind? Because I bet you if you do, it's exactly what the guys looked like in this situation.
Well, in between when there's nobody browsing their table, they're busy doing crunches.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Or they have the pull up bar. Combing their long dark hair.
Right.
Yeah. The pull up bar. A lot of scissor kicks. doing a bunch of press ups. Talking to their two or three girlfriends.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of women there. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no. There wasn't.
Yeah. So that's who I have in my mind.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was funny. I mean, again, it was, I wish I just had a camera to go around and just take pictures of all the characters that were in there. Cause it was so funny. Like you know what? I'm a camera enthusiast, let's say. And I love, you know, this sort of geeky stuff. And I wanted to stand in the middle of that room and yell, "Nerds!" So, and just let's see what happened, right?
Yeah. You're a good guy, Adam.
Yeah, I didn't though. I didn't.
No, no, wait, no. So good. So yeah, so you are a good guy. Never mind. Yeah. Oh, well. Besides that, did you shoot anything interesting this week?
Nope, I didn't shoot anything up until just a few shots today of the kids going out to school for Halloween. And I didn't even shoot them outside. I basically found a new spot that I like in my house upstairs in our bedroom where there's dark blue, sort of a dark bluish wall. And I've been using that as a simple backdrop and then just one light photos. And so, so I did that this morning. Once they were in their costumes, I took a quick on-camera flash photo of each kid just because I like to mark that, oh, here's what you were when, you know, this year. So nothing special, nothing I'm going to put on the wall, but probably goes into a scrapbook somewhere.
The scrapbook, yeah. It's, well, we rolled back the clocks last week, a week ahead of you guys, which means the late evening sun is now in the afternoon.
Okay.
Which is actually kind of good. I mean,
it's great. You know, yeah, it's absolutely.
Well, I don't like that it gets dark so early, but it is nice at that time of day when the kids are out running around. And we've actually had a stretch of really fantastic golden sun in the afternoons and evenings. And so I was shooting a lot of that, a lot of great colors, really that nice, really that low golden sun, which creates really nice light, especially on kids who have no wrinkles yet. So. So we kind of, you know, we've gone for walks out in the sort of the countryside where we live and that's been really nice. I also tried out a new technique, which we will talk about next week.
Okay.
Okay. Not new technique, but something I, you know, sort of decided it was time to experiment with. And the whole episode next week will be all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Photo
challenge.
You're
not even going to tease it. What even the name of this technique is?
There'll be a teaser, but you have to look for it.
Okay. All right.
There you go. Photo challenge was Halloween. Now, I thought, when I issued this challenge, I thought, oh, we're actually going to record the day after Halloween.
Right.
I was wrong.
Yeah. Day before.
Yeah. Most of it was, when I say I was wrong, I think like 50-50, probably half you. But no, it was me. And I thought, oh, great, I'll snap a Halloween photo at the party. I didn't.
Right.
Yet. That's okay. All.
Okay. All right.
But however, I stepped up. So with no further ado, here's my Halloween photo.
This looks similar to last week's.
But better,
better,
I think.
Definitely better. Definitely better. Yeah. I don't see smoke, though.
No, there was no smoke theme this year, this week.
Okay. All so, right. I was thinking there was
equal,
just going to be billowing.
Equal amount of smoke as last
week. Yeah. I thought there was going to be billowing smoke here.
You know, there really should have been. I mean, I had a lot more control on this. This was shot inside the house. And so I had a lot more control over the situation. So I guess I should have added some smoke.
Now, did your daughter carve this pumpkin?
Either my daughter or my son with my help.
Okay. All right.
I'm not sure. I forget whose is whose because I don't really care too much. But
mm-hmm. There's definitely some, there's a jagged nose and some jagged eyes. So
yes.
Yeah, that's fine so long as you didn't go solo on this one.
No. And to be fair, I think my daughter had had 4 or 5 beers by this point.
Okay.
Yeah. She was. So this is her. So I brought it in the house and blam, that's the photo I came up with.
Okay. So what'd you do here? So that looks
you
like
tell you me.
Got, well, looks like you got some rim lighting going on for the top of the pumpkin.
Uh huh.
And probably a blue gel or something because it's very blue, that light on top.
Yes. I used a 3/4 CTB.
Okay. And then.
Do you know why a 3/4?
Why a 3/4? Because how many do you have? Do you have a half and a full?
I have a quarter. I think I have an eighth. Eighth,
really?
Quarter, half. Yeah.
Why you specifically chose the 3/4?
I very specifically chose a 3/4 for this.
Don't know. Why?
It was the first one I grabbed out of the bag.
Okay.
And I wasn't going to go back and look for a different one.
Okay. So you've got the blue to kind of make for that contrast between the blue and then that makes the orange look more orange.
Correct.
Right, and then inside you got is that a flame or did you do the flash in your Ziploc baggie trick?
You tell me. What do you think?
I'm gonna say it's too lit, so I'm gonna say flash in the Ziploc bag mm-hmm. with an orange filter on that flash.
It is a candle.
Really?
Correct.
Oh well, it does a good job lighting that whole thing.
It does. There's a trick to it. This was actually. A fair amount of setup because I had to go get my black background out. I actually used my seamless black background on my stand.
Okay.
In my office because I didn't have a chance to shoot this at night. I wanted to do it at night, and that way I didn't have to do any of this work, but turns out...
Yeah, this is a lot of prep here.
A little too much prep.
Yeah, okay.
So I rolled the black background out, which is very simple, and then darkened the room entirely. Put the roll shutters down in my office.
Yeah.
So there was no daylight coming in. Got a green, we have a crate that's been painted green. That comes in handy for this kind of stuff. Flip it on its end. Lit the candle. I put the pumpkin on there. Lit the candle.
Okay.
Put the camera on a tripod.
Okay.
And set it at I believe it was an f/8 ISO 100.
Mm-hmm.
And set a shutter speed of 30 seconds.
Wow.
So that gives enough time for that candle to really give a glow.
Yeah.
Okay. And by that point, you even there's enough kind of little glow that you get enough little orange light kind of like around the pumpkin as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do that, and then try the shot again, and then with my flash, with the three quarter CTB on it, mm-hmm. zoomed all the way to 85 with the snoot on it.
Mm-hmm.
Once I trip the trigger, I just basically walk over and stand right above, hold my flash in my hand right above the pumpkin, and just with my hand, just fire it. There's no remote needed.
Okay, yeah.
Because you have 30 seconds to do that.
Right.
And I set it so that now the 30 seconds doesn't make a difference on the flash exposure. All it matters is your ISO and your aperture of f/8. So I dialed in what I figured would be the right exposure, which is like 1/16th power or something like that.
Okay.
And just quickly trip the flash, and that's the image you get. Now, I did that a couple of times with just on top, and something was missing. I just couldn't... I wanted to get a little detail on the crate.
Okay.
So essentially, I fired the flash 3 times. I held it right above the pumpkin, flashed it quickly, and then held it higher, raised the flash up to kind of kill the power a little bit, and raked one across each side of the crate. just to hit that surface, so that surface pops out. And that's it. So it's a flash exposure and a long exposure to get the candle, and that's how it blends together.
Gotcha.
So kind of a complicated explanation for a rather simple process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, too.
In retrospect, yes.
But, I mean, the technique is good if you just could have avoided the need for the black background. And, yeah, I get why you had to do it this way. But, yeah, like the whole setup sounds like, again, what I do and then completely regret it.
Oh, yeah, I won't do this again. This is one and done.
It's a good photo, though. I like it.
Yeah, I will actually use this technique in a different application. Like, I would never do it for something like this, but I was kind of glad I did it because I know this will come up.
And you learned something.
Yes, I did.
There
Don't
you go.
Do
and
this
so
again.
Did we. Yeah, and so did we. We all learned something here.
Yes. And so, yeah, that's it. So I think it could be the poster for Halloween 5.
Great.
All right, let's look at yours. Now, you picked two.
I picked two. This year I decided that for my Halloween photo for the show, I would kind of do like Halloween headshots. Just thought that, I was thinking that people were going to hear this before Halloween. Of course, they're not. So too late. By the time you're hearing this, you missed your chance to do simple Halloween headshots. So maybe we should have, for next year, you can do
that's right.
Halloween headshots. But similar to yourself, I wanted sort of a dark background, and I don't have, I used to have gray paper, but it's just run out, so I need to get another roll because I really like the gray seamless paper, but I didn't have any, so I started looking in my house for a dark wall. Well, the darkest wall is upstairs in my bedroom, and again, it's a room where I can close the blinds, knock all the ambient light out, and literally get pitch black. So basically, my mom was in town, and I asked her, "Oh, you know, for Halloween, would you do a headshot?" And she said, "Sure." And I said, "I'm going to paint your face." And she said, "Are you sure?" And she agreed. So I did a picture of my mom in a crazy face paint. So that's my first picture. I promised my mom I was going to use her. I didn't want to bump her from the lineup after I did the photo. So there's
your mom?
So that's my mom. Yeah.
I thought it was Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, she and I did that photo, so it's a very simple one light. I actually used the softbox, had my dad hold it because I didn't feel like setting up a light stand. So basically had my dad hold the bracket with the softbox and the grid on it so that I could kind of aim the light in front of her and keep as much off the background as possible. So and then I took it from a few different angles, the light, and then I got kind of the nice kind of gradient that I wanted on the wall, and there you have it. So it was a matter of, did we want an angry face? Did we want a happy face? I figure we wanted, for her, I took a few and I liked the happy face. So there you have it. That's a single light, very simple, front of a dark background, so really no tricks here, and done in about, well, after the face painting, done in about 1.5 minutes. The face painting itself took about 30 minutes.
Right.
And then once I'd done that, I thought, okay, hey, now I know exactly what I'm going to get. I'm going to get my daughter, and I'm going to do a shot of her. So that was the photo of my daughter. She's going to be she's calling it a princess pop star. So that's her outfit. So she's got a fancy dress, and I thought I'm going to keep the dress just to the minimum. And she found a wig, and she wanted to wear it, so she put on this bright red wig. And I thought I'm just going to do the exact same thing I did with Grandma's photo, and just one light in a softbox. This time I didn't have a helper, so I put it on the stand, and again with the grid, and just kind of threw the light in front of her, and ta-da! And I love the photo of my daughter. The photo of Nana is fine. The photo of my daughter might be one of my favorite pictures ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I can't tell you why. It's partially the look. It's partially the light. It's partially I never shoot dark backgrounds, so it grabs me. It's the hair that stands out. And again, I'm not exactly sure. I haven't been able to sort of say why I like it so much. There's a sort of a quiet innocence about it with, again, all the crazy colors. It's partially just the stoic look, I think.
That, but, that's,
She's not yelling at me to get her something.
I was going to ask you, and I was going to use the word stoic. I said, why is she so stoic? Stoic, legitimately, I was going to... We don't use that word every day.
No, don't use that word hardly ever.
And I was wondering, wow, the stoicism she's throwing here, like, good for her. The one thing, one of the things I do notice, the big difference, or one big difference, is the placement of the light. The one with your mom is she's being lit from underneath.
A little bit, yeah, you're right, she is.
Well, you can see the reflection in her eyes, yeah. And the shadow on her nose are kind of going up a little bit.
Yeah.
Versus a much higher light.
Definitely, on my daughter.
1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference in the tone of the photo.
Mm-hmm.
So agreed. No, when you sent both of them, you had the one of your mom, marked as first, and I put the other one. I switched them and said, no, you got to go with your daughter because that the red hair just pops out. It looks really cool.
Yeah, and no, you know? And I 100% agree. The one of my daughter is a far better photo. Just that I did not want Nana to get bumped from the lineup. So because I had already told her beforehand, oh yeah, I'm going to do all this face painting. I'll use this, and I posted it for her on Facebook so her friends could see that what a good sport she was. But no, the photo of my daughter is just it's just a much better photo.
Can you take the photo of your daughter with more background? Like, do you have more background above her head, like available?
Yeah, I have a veil. She's sitting on the bed, so I don't have a lot of wiggle room to go down. Mm-hmm. And it's a big kind of like, wooden bed frame that's got the big posts. So I was basically trying to work an angle where I can't get too far back. Like, I was pretty tight as far as the space to go. But then I tried to shoot some up and down of the kids today, this morning, just so I'd get a little bit more costume in. So there is a bit of wiggle room. Because I never shoot in here, this was kind of like, wow, this is sort of unclaimed territory, and I'm going to use it a lot more because it's such an easy setup. Like I say, no background stand. Just
is this the 85 mil?
This is 50 mil.
Okay,
I
50
think.
Mil, so you're,
actually,
yeah.
I can't remember because I was going. I've used both lenses in the last few days, so I can't remember 50 or 85.
It's 50.
Okay.
So my suggestion to you, I was hoping it was the 85 and that way you could go to the 50 and have more room.
Yeah.
I would shoot this if you can back up a little, great. If not, oh well, try one of these in portrait mode. Mm-hmm. And keep the bottom of the frame exactly where it is, right? Like at her shoulders like that, and just go up. And what I will like about this shot is you'll have a lot of dead space at the top,
mm-hmm.
which is okay. You know my policy on that, but the gradient, that's a blue wall, you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that gradient's just going to get darker and darker up that wall, and it's really going to lead right into that red hair. It's going to look awesome.
Okay.
So my suggestion is to try that.
I don't know if we'll get this red hair on her again, because it was very itchy. Today for school, we spray painted her hair pink because she wanted the look, but she would. I doubt we'll get the. And the red hair is way better than the spray paint pink. Like, it's just more vibrant. Yeah.
Okay, we'll put it on your son then.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. And there was a really good picture I took of her with the with a blue wig on. So very mm-hmm. very similar sort of model-esque look to her. But it made her look far too old, and I was like, I refuse to put that up. I show that to my wife, and she's like, oh no! Like
you're dancing close to the edge on this one too.
Yeah. This one she already looks old, but there's still sort of a very much like an innocence to it. The mm-hmm. the one in the blue was like, all right, now she's 14, and I don't even want to think about that.
I would even try to get, if she will wear the red wig again, just do it with a regular T-shirt or something. You don't even have to have the princess outfit on.
Yeah.
That will actually be kind of a cool looking thing because the way the red frames her face is great. And normally you get like red is difficult to shoot. It can blow out. It just doesn't look good. But in this case, it really looks great.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you think so. Cause yeah, I just saw it and I was like, whoa, that's cool. And part of it is just where the light hits her eyes too. Like, mm-hmm. that's part of what I like so much. And because of such a high angle as far as the light goes, and because of, like, the bangs and the little bit of overhang of the red, it just hits the light, just hits just the right part of her face in order to keep the eyes in a little bit of shadow. And I think that's part of what I like so much, too. just where the shadow falls and where the shadow on her nose falls and on her mouth falls. And again, just where the red of the hair reflects back on the other side of her face, like the red glow it gives to her cheek, almost like a bounce board, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all not planned, just again, happy accident.
Well, you put yourself in that position to make the accident. That's how it goes.
There you go.
All right, this week's topic. I did an interview with Chris Marquardt, who you've heard of, Tips from the Top Floor.
Yeah, I've heard him.
He and I made a tweet paw last week.
Okay.
A faux
Is that
paw
a mistake?
Faux paw via the Twitter.
Okay.
I tweeted, he sent me his book. I got a book from him. He co-wrote a book. That was the important part that I left out. He co-wrote a book with his wife. Not technically married, I don't think. I don't really care. I'm not his biographer.
Okay.
But his better half, Monica, and he co-wrote a book together all about film photography and processing, and it's called Absolute Analog, and he was kind enough to send me one of the first copies in German. I think we talked about it last week.
Yep, we did.
Yeah. We did. Okay, good. I was asking. And so I talked to him all about it, and so here's my interview with Chris.
About those pesky Canadians.
I'm not using any of that. Now we're rolling. Now it's starting now.
That's okay.
We're that other stuff.
So I guess you got me on the show because you want to ask me why I've turned into a nostalgic hipster.
Yes. Yes, and I just realized your book is sitting over here. I'm going to go grab it while
I don't say anything.
Right. No, it's right there. I got it now.
All right.
It's heavy.
It's a 300 page book.
Wow.
Printed on really good paper, really amazing print quality.
And single spaced too. Wasn't even like this double space nonsense I did in high school.
And the font is regular size as well. Yes.
Yeah. And smells like a book. So there you go. So are you what did you call yourself? A hipster?
Well, you know, that's actually, that is the question I get. Okay, this is a book about analog photography, about film photography.
Yes.
And this seems to not really fit the times, right? We're all digital now.
So we're talking with Chris Marquardt from Tips from the Top Floor and other places. Did I properly introduce you? I don't think so.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, that's okay. The thing is, this book that we're talking about is in German, so most of your listeners will not even be interested in it.
Everybody's bilingual.
Yet there is some. There's a bit of an announcement.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. Now you made a book. Now I'm holding the book.
Well, I made a book together with Monica.
Yes.
My better half. Okay, so she wrote 50% of the book, and I have to mention this right in the beginning because it really tends to be seen by many people as Chris's book, but it's not. It's Chris's and Monica's book, and she pretty much wrote the better half of the book. I mean, seriously, her writing is so much better than mine. So if you read something in the book and you go, oh, that's nice, that's probably from her.
I'm guilty of this myself because when I did the Twittering about getting your new book, I didn't include her on the Twitter, and that's a Twitter faux pas.
It's okay. I mean, that's why I'm saying it here. Everyone talking about the book, make sure you credit Monica because she really is an integral part of the book.
Yes, and now I see it, and her name's even first. And I'm assuming that's just
her name is first. Yeah, yeah.
So tell me about the book. Why
nurse?
Why an absolute analog book?
Okay, so the book is about film photography, and let's get the nostalgia out of the way. I mean, okay, I have a Pentacon 6 here, and yes, I must admit, listen to this. That is just a beautiful sound. A camera, the fine mechanics in a camera like this, there is something to that. There is something to the whole haptic side of it that you cannot really get from digital cameras. But that is not the main reason. I mean, there are so many reasons to look into analog photography, to look into film. And I think one of the things is because it kind of keeps you close to what photography is actually about. We tend to get so easily lost in the gadgetry, in the, oh, look, I have my new camera can do X, Y, and Z, and it has all the bells and whistles. But in the end, photography isn't really about that. It's about other things.
It's starting to come around, though, and not just in the hipster community.
Oh, we see a massive resurgence in analog photography. It is a niche. I mean, admit it. The heydays of film photography are over. But
are they?
Well, it's definitely much smaller than it was back in the mid-90s. Mid-90s, yeah. Where this huge surge. I mean, I pretty much opened the book with it. Seve, a big German lab, processed, I think in 96, they processed 2 billion pictures, and that's a lot for the German market.
Okay.
And it's a lot less now, but stuff is coming back. That's the interesting thing. The question is there film? And yes, there is film. Kodak still makes a lot of film. Fuji still makes a lot of film. There was a Kickstarter campaign to revive Ferrania, which is a big Italian film factory. Mm-hmm. So they are back in production. Hollywood has made new contracts with Kodak to make sure they get film over the next years, because I mean, people like Quentin Tarantino or Martin Scorsese or Christopher Nolan, or best example, J.J. Abrams, they shoot on film.
The Star new Wars
Star
is on
Wars
film,
film
isn't it?
Are on film. A film. The new, yes. Star Wars movies are on film, and that's not just because these guys are old farts and they can't deal with digital. They have all played and experimented and used digital, but there is a different, I mean, it touches in so many areas. For example, the workflow is a different one when you shoot a movie. Mm-hmm. And you know that better than anyone else. The movie making of today with digital, let's do another take. And then you have all this footage that you then have to go through in post-production. When you shoot on film, you need to just from the cost point of view, you need to stick to a much tighter workflow. You need to plan better. You have less scrap to deal with later on, which turns this whole thing into a different kind of working and into a more precise kind of working. And the same is true for photography, for still photography. If you shoot film, it kind of forces you into thinking more about what you do there, into dealing more with, I mean, simple things, exposure. You can't do a second shot because you don't have a display on the back that tells you if you were right or not. So you have to learn to do this better. That's the biggest thing I find, is that film photography has, if anything, it has changed my digital photography massively. It has improved my digital photography on many levels.
It's kind of a leapfrog effect for me, because as I got better at digital, my film photography got much better. And then as that got better, my digital photography got even better. So going back and forth like that helped both sides of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just technical things like exposure. I mean, you look at the limitations that you have in analog photography. You have to decide on what kind of film you use. You put that in a camera and that's it. If you put a roll of black and white in there, it's black and white and you have no choice there. You have less pictures, like with a medium format camera, you might have as little as 8 pictures on one film.
Right.
So it limits you, and that limitation forces you to be more creative. So it is going to change your creative process in some way, and it has done for me, and it has done for many others.
One of the things I like the best about it is the lack of immediate feedback. Is you take that picture with film, and that's it. You can't look at it, nothing. Your involvement with that image is over with until you get into the dark room.
Yeah. And we see that in, I mean, it's, I mean, let's go one step back and look at what digital photography allows us to do. And it first seems to be a boon to be able to delay a lot of the decisions in the process. Like in digital photography, you can decide on your white balance later. You can decide on the crop later because you have so many pixels. You can decide on, I don't know, you shoot a burst and then decide on which of the 20 pictures you shot you will take to capture that exact moment. If you go into stuff like the light field photography, you will even be able to choose the focus later. So we're delaying a lot of the decisions now in digital photography. And what feels like, oh, it's taken pressure off my shoulders to decide on things, is gonna come back to haunt us later. It is.
I agree.
It is. You sit there, and then all of a sudden, you are in front of these 5,000 pictures from your vacation, and you have no idea what to do with them because you didn't make decisions in the field. And analog kind of forces you to get into that mindset again. It's not just like analog. I mean, analog does that, but it kind of helps you practice that mindset again. And when you go back to digital and you have that mindset, you will come up with being so much happier about your photos because you have already made the important decisions while you shot them.
One of my best tips I hand out that people completely disregard is when you're shooting digital, and invariably when you take a picture of one of your friends or somebody you know, what's the first thing that they ask?
How many megapixels does your camera have?
Can I see that? Can I see the screen?
Let me see the screen? Oh, yes. Let me see it. That's the norm, yeah.
And I don't let anybody see it ever. No matter what. Even clients, the boss, I might show him one, and then that'll be it. Like recently, I've been in the middle of doing a fairly large portrait session, like for all the employees of a company. And we're over multiple days, and they come in. And I won't show anybody their images at all. So that's it. No, you get your picture taken, and then you go, and then we're done. And the same with my friend's kids. The first thing that the four-year-olds do, they're like, let me see. Can I see it? No. And they look at you like you're the worst person in the whole world. But I said, you're on the playground. Go enjoy the playground. Don't enjoy the moment that already happened. And let's triple the time we spend on each image and then lose out on the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now that with film, you don't get, that's it. You take the picture and that's it. You're moving on. I love that.
you know, another thing I like about film photography, and that's by the way, the thing that I think I like most is that nowadays it's a playful approach. It used to be like, well, let's just look back into the 80s. Back in the 80s, it was the only photography we had, and people tried to make it as precise as possible and as repeatable as possible.
Yes.
With exactly minute decisions about how long to expose and to develop and stuff. Nowadays, we have for the surgically clean photography, we have digital. Digital does that. No problem whatsoever. But analog now is just way more playful and lets you experiment. And that playful approach, I find, also makes for a better learning experience because you learn so much better if you're playing as opposed to if you're heads down in a classroom learning about things. So for me, that also has changed a lot in terms of how I approach photography.
One of my favorite things about film and why I like film in movies more than digital is that on your sensor, a pixel, it never moves. It's there. That pixel exists in that location forever.
True.
In film, there's it's like snowflakes. There's no two pieces of film with an identical grain structure.
So every single one out of those 24 frames has a different structure.
Correct. And it's entirely random. And so when you watch movies that are shot on film, you don't know that you notice, but your brain notices that there's something happening there.
I've heard directors call this kind of a breathing quality of film.
Mm-hmm.
It's alive, kind of, and that translates to some subconscious thing in the viewer.
Possibly, or it could just be the way we've always done it, and there's that muscle memory. Who knows? But either way, I happen to like it. I like the sheer randomness of the grain that comes in, whereas with the digital, it's there. You know, pixel one is always in that location. Never moves. Now you can add grain later. That's a reasonable approximation, but it doesn't have quite the same quality. Because as you know, computers can't do random.
No, not too well.
No, it doesn't exist. So, about the book, what do we find in the book?
Well, first of all, the book is about why do we actually want to look at analog photography? Why does it make sense even for digital photographers to, if not experience yourself, even though that would be kind of the goal, to have people really get their hands wet in the truest sense of the word. Mm-hmm. It's about dealing with this different approach. And for many, many readers, it is a different approach. It is the thing that they've never done. We're talking about the digital natives, people who have never shot a roll of analog. And so it's that understanding why it's beneficial to at least immerse yourself in to a certain extent in that. And the other thing is, it's a how-to book. You will learn how to develop film in your kitchen. You will learn how to. I mean, you don't have to build a darkroom for this. You will learn how to scan film, to digitize film, because I mean, we are also children of the digital age. So of course we have scanners. Of course we use Lightroom. Of course we love to tinker with photos in the digital world. So this, what we call the hybrid approach, is really the combination of the two worlds into something where you benefit on both sides. And of course, it's also to give people back this experience of not just experiencing photography, but of being able to grasp it, you know, to really touch photography, because nowadays you can't. The photos are this ephemeral thing on a memory card somewhere or in the cloud. But being able to touch a strip of negatives and to see the pictures with your own eyes through a piece of plastic is actually a very, very visceral thing.
It's oddly exciting.
It is, yes.
Yes, it is. The key is, I think, is to let people know that if you go with the hybrid route, it processing your own film and then scanning it is not nearly the commitment as a full darkroom is.
No, it's not. Developing a roll of film, you can do this in 15 minutes. That's not a biggie. It's not a big deal. If you have a development tank that holds five rolls of film, then those five rolls of film will take 15 minutes. It's really, it is a bit of a commitment, yes. But again, you don't have to get into this. You can just read about it and try to ask a friend if he has one of those tanks left up in the attic. Try it out and get the idea. It's not a big commitment, but it turns into, for me, it turns into something that's almost like a meditation, you know? It takes me out of the hectic day, and if I develop film and I take my time and I use a slower process or something, I might be there for half an hour just pouring the chemicals, measuring, making this a very, very hands-on process. And there's something really satisfying about that.
There's an odd Zen feeling to it.
It is, but now we're taking this into the esoteric realm again, and I don't want it to be there.
No. But in terms of commitment, if you just want to process your own film in your house, you don't need to dedicate an entire room to this.
No, of course not.
You need a change bag. I'm guessing this is all.
You can even use a dark room. You don't even you can load the film into the tank in a dark room. You don't even need to buy anything for that.
Sure.
So, but the biggest question now is, why would anyone want to hear about this book? Because it's in German. We are actually working with a publisher to translate it to English right now. So there will be an English version.
Okay, so right now the book is only available in
German. It's only in German at this point. It's called Absolut Analog. We've partnered with Rocky Nook, an American publisher of photography books. And together with them, we're in the process of translating it. And it is going to be out sometime in 2016, and the English title will be The Film Photography Handbook.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we looked long and hard at how to call this thing, but I think it makes most sense. The analog moniker isn't really that prevalent in the States. It's more like film.
Okay.
So here in Germany, we'd say analog. In the US, we'd more say film. So it's the film photography handbook.
I have the German version. You were kind enough to send me the book already, and I can tell it's well written because I can actually understand it.
That's good. Even in German.
yeah. No, you can Deutsch, but ever. You know, only when it's, you know, high German.
Yeah,
we didn't write it in Swabian.
So the process of writing a book is a very interesting one because, first of all, there's our manuscript and we handed that in and then we did some corrections and some back and forth. And then, of course, there's a layer of copy editing, typo correction and stuff. So there are people at the publisher who kind of try to iron out the worst things. And so all this together ended up in a product that Monica and I are really, really excited about. I mean, this is our first bigger book, and it's not the last, by the way. There's more to come, but it really ended up being this beautiful process with a great publisher here in Germany, Depunkt, by the way. And we're really happy with how it came out.
It's a real book.
A real, real, real book. You can get it in bookstores.
Yeah, and well, that's great. Good to point out. Where are all the places that you can find the book?
Oh, the usual suspects. I mean, Amazon and all online bookstores and book shops should carry it, or if not, they will be able to get it for you. Here in Germany, the book system is pretty good. So if you go to a bookstore, they don't have it, they will have it the next day.
Now, this is available on the Kindle as well.
It is also available in a Kindle version, even though I kind of, you know, we really debated making this into a digital book only, but...
I'm glad you didn't.
Well, we are glad too, because the people who are interested in the analog side of things, I believe, will also be more excited about having a real book in their hand, because it kind of underlines that haptic side of things. And I think the book came out really well. The paper is in an excellent quality. The print is beautiful. There's not a single thing, apart from a few typos that we found in the final book. There's nothing that I would change.
See, now, I don't want to take, you know, food off your table here, but I would instruct people, buy the real book. Don't buy the Kindle version.
Oh, yeah, go ahead and do that. The real book is definitely the one to get.
It's a piece of art unto itself. Like, it's going to look good in my bookshelf.
It's not just a how-to book. I mean, we have a whole bunch of pictures in there that we shot with film, with all sorts of different cameras, from the smallest formats to the biggest 4x5 to pinhole cameras, through all old German cameras, old American cameras. It's really... In addition to being this how-to, it's also a collection of some of our best photography, our best film photography.
And how long has this book been in the works?
Oh, we've started probably about a year. Mm-hmm. We didn't have like a constant every week so many thousand words on it, but we had a few really long weekends with a lot of production. Then there were a few photo sessions, because obviously the process in the book, how to develop, how to scan, needs to be documented also in pictures. There need to be illustrations. So there were lots of photo sessions for that. Actually, it's a bit of a family production as well, because my brother, who's a graphic designer, he made all the graphics for the book. So there's simple things like an illustration how film actually looks, like the layers of a film. Mm-hmm. These kind of things are in the book. That's all made by my brother. So it's really kind of this great, tight, small team working on this. And in total, I think from the moment we were asked to write the book to its... hitting the shelves, it was about a year, I think.
Great. And right. if you want to rip Chris off, buy the book. I think it's pretty relatively cheap for what you get. That's my opinion. I'm looking at the back of the book. It says 35. Is that right?
$34.90. It's for 300 pages. That's a steal
for what you're going to learn. And I say this not because, you know, I've known you for a long time and we're friends. But that's a great value. What you're going to learn from this and take away from this book is worth far more than the $34.90. But I'm going to warn you, if you do buy the book, you're probably going to get hooked. And if people get hooked on film photography, the next step is my recommendation: attend one of the Absolute Analog workshops.
which at this point are in German, but as we continue and as we progress with the English translation, I'm pretty sure there will be some English stuff as well, and potentially on the North American continent.
Really?
But it's just really early days.
Assuming you can get your film through airport
yeah, X-rays. Right. Well, you can still get those lead bags, you know?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Still
that'll
available.
Go quite well. I say this not because, you know, it's written down here on the piece of paper, but I've actually attended one of your analog workshops.
You have, yes.
I think I attended one and shot a video at a different one. So I've been a couple times, and I got to tell you, I absolutely loved it. I had shot film a long time ago, but it had been a long time. It was, you know, probably in high school, the last time I had shot and processed my own film. And just as if you want a refresher, there's no better way than to get in there for, you know, for a couple of days with Chris and Monica and other like-minded individuals.
And it totally turned you into one of those nostalgic hipsters. Now you're trying to grow a beard, right?
I can grow a great beard. It's just that kids sit on my lap and ask for toys. So that's the problem. As soon as I walked away from on the Sunday, I was right on Amazon buying a tank or wherever. No, you sent me a different link to where to buy the developed tank and all that, and that was it. I stocked my own.
Oh, and you know, the stuff is still available. Maybe some of the photo stores don't have it on stock, and definitely the grocery stores don't really have film anymore. But
DM has it.
DM has some film stock, yes.
Yes.
But the real to get an idea of what level of film is available and the tools and things, you have to go online these days. There are lots of great online stores in the US. I mean, B&H Photo is a good example. In Toronto, Henry's is a good example. In Germany, you'd have like at least three or four different stores that have taken this business online. So there is a lot of stuff available. It's not really, it hasn't disappeared.
And cameras are everywhere.
Oh, and cheap. I mean, the thing is, one of the reasons I went into analog photography is because I was all of a sudden able to afford a medium format camera.
Right.
You know, like one of these Hasselblad things. That was the biggest draw. I wanted to go beyond the full frame, what we call full frame in digital, the 35mm format. And all of a sudden, there were so many of these cameras on the market that I could afford one, and I got one, and that got me hooked. But it's got to be something different for everyone.
And in medium format, I still want my own medium format camera, because it's one of those things that you think of, this, you know, 35mm is good enough.
By the way, the book also has some good stuff in it about how to choose a used camera, what to look out for when you buy a used camera.
Okay.
Because that is the most daunting thing for lots of people. That's the big hurdle. Like, okay, I want to, but I don't know what to look for when I'm going to shop for a used SLR or a used medium format or even a used 4x5.
I do recommend picking one up. I mean, you can find what does a used 35mm camera cost? I know that's a really broad question, but what can you expect to pay for something reasonable?
Oh, this can start at $10.
That's what I mean.
It can be really low. You have to look out for a few things, like the light seals, for example. If it's an older one from the early 70s, there's a slight chance that the light seals aren't good anymore because they're using these how do you call them? These foam things, the black foam in between that was pretty new back then, and they didn't have long-term experience with it. So chances are that it starts to crumble. But you can get entire seal packs for specific cameras and replace them yourself. They're with even older cameras, you might want to have a look at how good the shutters are. An old shutter might, the oils in an old shutter might have dried up a bit, and then you end up with a half second exposure being more like 1 second, you know,
right.
The exposures tend to go slower. But there's still a lot of shops out there that clean these things for you. There's a lot of there's this whole system, this whole subculture kind of happening with people actually repairing old cameras.
Yes, yeah, and like I said, it is catching on with the younger generation, Adam. His daughter is 8, and for Christmas this year, she wants one of the Fuji versions of the Polaroid.
Oh, an Instax. Cool, yeah. Cool,
so
cool,
that's,
cool.
I'm supposing she's not listening to this show, but spoiler alert, that's what she's getting for Christmas this year.
You need to say the spoiler alert before you say the thing.
I'm not sure she's still listening to the show.
Wrong order.
But yeah, so that's what she'll be getting, and Adam is pretty excited that she wants one, and I have a couple of my friends who have them just because they like the tactile feel.
Now, now Monica and I together have like 60 cameras here now because there are so many beautiful, beautiful pieces of work there.
And a Polaroid? Do you have a Polaroid?
Absolutely. An SX70 and one of those more plasticky ones. I think we have like 3 Polaroids in the house.
I think I'm gonna keep my eyes open. I want to get one myself just because I think it would blow my kids' minds, actually.
Oh, the foldable SX70 is a work of art. I mean, from a technological point of view, from the way it looks, it's just, wow, I love it.
Okay, now if people want to find out about your workshops, where can they go?
Well, the best way for the analog workshops is absoluteanalog.de. So there's a whole website dedicated to
but
that.
But I'm also glad I had you on the show now before you get too big. It looks to me like you are going worldwide with other workshops, not just the analog stuff.
Oh, Discover the Top Floor. That's pretty much the whole collection where I do more travel workshops, tours. We're going to Lake Baikal to Siberia next year, to the Lofoten in Norway, to Ireland. Already planning for 2017, which I've never been doing this that early, but in this case there are 2 things coming up in 2017 that I'm so excited about that I had to put them on there already. And one is Svalbard, Spitsbergen, which is very much pretty close to the North Pole.
Okay.
And Bhutan in the Himalayas, the Happiness Kingdom, which we're going to do both in 2017.
So there you go. So you want to get involved. Now, those are digital.
Well, no, you can bring an analog camera. You can bring your film camera. I will probably, for the Svalbard thing, there's a good chance that I'm actually going to bring the 4x5 because some of those icebergs and bizarre structures that you will see there, I think they lend themselves really well to large format photography.
So there you go. So check it out, absoluteanalog.de. That's correct?
That is it, yeah.
.de, Discover the Top Floor, and of course, Chris's weekly podcast?
It is still weekly, yes.
Okay. Not sure. You're a busy guy. I know what it's like the Tips from the Top Floor. And, of course, look for him on the Leo Laporte show. Is that what it's called? It's not called that, is it?
Oh, it's the Tech Guy show. Every Sunday.
Every Sunday. Yep. Chris, thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much.
And we're back.
Yes.
Both of us. No, both of us are back, not just me.
Okay, I'm here too.
Yeah, so what'd you think of that? Do you want to borrow my German book?
Nerds!
All right, ogre.
All right.
Yes.
No, not really.
No, it's a tough read in German if you don't speak German.
Yes.
If you do speak German and you do read German, which I do, then it's a much better read. And it's very well written. As we alluded to, as we talked about in the interview, it was very, I guess I came off as a bit of a fan in the interview.
Oh, no.
I wasn't as objective. I didn't sound as objective as you'd think. But I promise you I was being objective. It really is a good book.
Okay. You're entitled to your opinion. You're entitled.
Yes. This week when I do send out the Twitter, I will make sure I copy Monica on that as well. I felt bad. I felt bad not doing that. That's terrible.
Yeah.
But I urge everyone to check it out. If you do want the German one, get it on Amazon. But click through our site. Now I know you could click through his site and pay him twice. But why don't you split the difference? Help us both out.
Okay.
Click through our site and buy it. And as he mentions, wait till I think in the new year the English one's coming out.
Great. So then maybe I'll be interested. Yeah.
I think you will be.
Well, and it's much more than just film, right?
The book?
Yeah.
Well, it's analog. It's called absolute analog, so it's all about analog.
But I mean, there's photography principles to be learned, is there not?
Right.
There is, right? That are universally applicable?
Correct. In fact, so it will make your digital photography better.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
And if you ever wanted to know like how film actually works, like what you want to look behind, you know, the scenes or under the hood, that he explains it in pretty great detail, pretty simple terms, how film actually works.
This is not a shameless plug for Chris Marquardt, but in a way it is. Yesterday, no word of a lie, I was talking, you know, in the physiotherapy clinic with a patient who is a photographer as well and does some work on the side. It's not their principal job, but like me, they kind of do some work on the side. And we're talking about Lightroom, and I dropped Chris Marquardt's name as his discovering Lightroom tutorial. So there's another shameless Marquardt plug. But this literally happened yesterday, and I said, check it out, because I've gone through about 80% of it, and I love it. I mean, I'm now a full fledged Lightroom user, and I love that too. So while you're at it, subscribe to his video there. That is great.
On top of things you learn that you didn't know existed,
mm-hmm.
How much time have you saved just by knowing what you know now?
From the Discovering Lightroom?
Yes.
Oh, I've cut my workflow in half, at least.
It's immeasurable, to me. It's unbelievable. Like just the keyboard shortcuts and
yeah.
And all that aside, it is fantastic. So
and just simple like importing techniques and sorting principles that, you know, are maybe obvious if you came up through every version of Lightroom, but aren't if you're like us, you're coming over from a completely different kind of software.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it maybe just sort of saved me probably years of trial and error and just cut to the chase.
Done. Next week's challenge. I had something else, but now I'm far more interested in yours.
In my what?
Photo challenge.
Did I have one?
Yeah, no, you do now.
I did.
You're going to now. You don't know that you have one, but you have one.
Okay, are you gonna...
I'll give you a hint. It's gradient background.
Gradient background.
The gradient on the background, like you just shot.
Okay, all right. Gradient background.
I love it. This is something I love when I achieve in my images. Especially now, this doesn't have to be part of the. It does. It has to be part of the challenge now.
The gradient.
The gradient part. But you have to achieve this with one light.
Okay, and I think that's good because that's functional for most people. I think most people are gonna. Want to do it with one light
or OLG,
only do,
we call
can
it.
Do it yeah okay
the OL, that might even be the topic next week. I had something else in mind, but now it might be the OLG. I don't know.
Okay,
we'll see how it goes. We'll see how the image goes first.
I think there's a t-shirt in there somewhere.
The OLG.
yeah,
yes, is that even right? One light. Yeah, I did it right. Sometimes I have to check myself. Wait a second. Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
websites. Adam
AdamSchwartz.ca.
Okay.
Oh, and sometimes Facebook. Two Hosers Facebook site.
I think I want to learn how to be better at Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook. When I say Facebook, I mean all of the internet ting.
Okay. I only do Facebook. I don't do the Twitter thing. That's your neck of the woods.
There's so many angles to it.
Instagram, I don't do that either.
I was debating, is this something that we should be doing?
It sounds like everybody else is doing it. I have yet to look at it. So
if everybody else Instagrammed off a bridge, though, Adam, would you?
No, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. I'm debating opening starting an account that we would then post to, but I don't have a phone. You don't have to have a phone, do you? You can do your DSLR pictures, I think.
I think you can, yeah.
So maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll see about that. But my point is, in the near future, we're going to have a guy on to come and tell us about how to be good at interneting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Hopefully he knows what he's talking about, or just some guy off the street. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Odds are he'll know more than me. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. And your stuff, where do we find that?
We'll have to ask that guy. I'm not even sure. You can find my stuff for now at alanatridge.com, or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find the links, the photos, and everything that we talked about. All the stuff you need to know.
Okay.
Until next week, get out there and make better photos.